Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Glad you're here with us. It's Mark Kohler, yours truly, back from vacation. I don't think it was a vacation. It was all work. With my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen, who covered the show last week. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. And, you know, we had Jaron Burgesson filling in while you were out, Mark. You know, he's got a degree in broadcast journalism. Did you know that?
I did. He dreamed of being on ESPN radio, but it just didn't work out for him, did it?
Yeah, he's on the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. I mean, that's close.
It is. It's close.
Close. But, well, you were sorely missed. I know you were out in Arkansas and Kentucky.
Yeah. I was in Kentucky on Wednesday with the Landscaper Association National Conference, where Kentucky bluegrass really does exist.
Oh, yeah. They got the real deal, Kentucky bluegrass.
They got the real grass out there.
Did you run into them Duke boys while you're out there?
Dude, I'm not kidding. When I was driving through Arkansas, now this could offend some people, so forgive me. It's like going back in time. I'm not kidding. I stopped at this little corner shop in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas, had some barbecue, and I'm not kidding. And I know this is offensive to somebody. I'm driving along. There's a Confederate flag flying right here on this trailer. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And it's crazy place. But then I was driving through Arkansas to get to Heber Springs, where I met with the RV conference of RV owners through Work Camper and RVIC and Steve Anderson and Cooper. And it was just a great meeting. And so I kind of knocked out two birds with one stone. And
nice.
It was good. Country living. Hit Waffle House while I was there. Of course, you can't
naturally. Well, welcome back. It's good for you to be with me, Mark. I'm like, it's just kind of sometimes the rhythm is not as great. It's nice to have you back. I appreciate all the energy you bring to the show. And today, man, we're gonna need it because we're talking about cryptocurrency.
What? That's exciting. We don't need any energy for that.
I know, but man, it's like, I don't know what to say. There's a lot of philosophical stuff behind it on why people like it. It's also very technologically, advanced. It can be complex. And I think a lot of people got bought into simply the hype on it, when they bought Bitcoin at 20,000 and now it's like 6,000 or something. And so we want to try and cut through the hype on it, talk about what it is, why you may want to know about it, what's this blockchain all about, and what are the investing opportunities in it. And so we'll bring on Scott Carter later on in the show. He'll be our special guest today because, man, we need it. And he is a true expert in the field, speaks regularly on the topic. So, and you might have heard him when we talk about precious metals too. That's another area he has expertise in. So we'll be bringing him on later in the show, though.
I love it. Yeah, that was a great show when we talked about gold and silver. And if for those that are new to the show, and this may be your first podcast you've listened to, we're going to get right to it. We do try to keep it light, try to keep it fun, keep it interesting. We want you to get to know mine and Matt's personalities because it makes the show more enjoyable, we hope. And so we're going to joke around. We're going to be dorks and talk about Waffle House and, driving through Kentucky. But that's okay. Guys, you're the captain of your own ship, and you do have to have some ownership of your tax and legal strategies. And that's what we're trying to do on the show, is at least make sure you're aware of them so that you can hold your professionals accountable. We're not trying to be the tax lawyer for every person in America. We're not. We're going to take clients as within our growth rate and hopefully wow you. But we've got a lot of services to provide, but this is not an infomercial either. It really is about helping you get educated on some fun, cool strategies. And every week we try to bring a cool topic. So welcome to the show if you're new. We start every show with a tax and legal tip that even if you're not thrilled about the topic for the entire hour, some people drop off after the tax and legal tip. Some drop in after the tax and legal tip. So we're trying to keep everybody entertained to some degree. So Matt, why don't you run with the tax tip?
Right.
Okay.
Sweet. Let me do it.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, this tax tip is near and dear to my heart because I think every American should have one account. If there's one account every American should have, it is a Roth IRA.
Oh, nice.
Okay. If it's
it's not a gym membership or.
You could skip that. I mean, that's good, you know, but that's another podcast. For your financial fitness though.
Okay.
If you want to get ripped and you want to get lean.
Ooh.
You want top performance?
Yes, I want that too.
You want a Roth IRA. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the deal on the Roth IRA. And I wanted to give a little quick tax tip on it, but I just want to say on the Roth IRA, I'm very serious about this and why it's a cool account. There's one account in the US that the federal government has said, you know what? You put $5,500 a year into this account, or you convert some money into it. We're going to talk about that. Whatever money you make in this, you don't need to worry about paying taxes to us at the IRS or your state.
Ever.
And you know what? When you want to take that money out at retirement, when you've invested it over these years and you've grown it, don't worry about paying us taxes either. That is like every other account you may set up in your life. You ain't getting that.
No.
All right? Hmm. So it's really a unique tool. Roth accounts are excellent. So I just wanted to note that. Now,
can I add something before you give the strategy too?
Yes.
I know many of our followers are Dave Ramsey fans. We are too. We think he is just hardcore good for so many millions of Americans. But where Dave Ramsey leaves off, we pick up and run. We really do. And I think he does a fantastic job. We've had his daughter on the show that wrote a financial literacy book for children, and she was great. We can't get Dave on the show maybe someday, but he's a big deal. But the point is, Dave says, pay off your home, get out of debt, have a reserve emergency fund, and start saving. And he talks about the Roth on occasion, and he does. But the beauty of this is, from a tax perspective, as your tax advisors, these are better than even an IRA. They're better than a 401k. Now, if you have a 401k at work and they're doing matching, that's great. You're going to get Social Security. That's great. But you're going to pay taxes on your Social Security. You're going to pay taxes on your 401k. And if you put money in an IRA, you're going to pay taxes on that. And I love the way you said, Matt, if there's one account to choose, if you only had one choice outside of Social Security, what should you start? I love your comment.
The Roth IRA. Yeah. I put that Roth IRA up against anything. I mean, it's a real deal.
Yeah, my kids. I'm trying to help my kids that are in their 20s open one. And Molly is 15. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so all you need is earned income to have it. Now, here's the strategy, though. I think a lot of people look at a Roth IRA and they may have heard, oh, you phase out. If I make more than like 120 grand a year, I can't put money into a Roth IRA. I phase out. That is true. There's some other strategies called the backdoor Roth IRA to get money in, but there's one that's really cool. And in fact, Mark's even got a YouTube video on it that's recent coming out. Is it up yet?
Oh yeah, it's out. Yep.
Okay,
it's out
right now.
Get over to YouTube, type Mark Kohler Roth, and it comes right up.
And so you can convert to Roth. So if you're sitting there, you're like, I do have an old 401k or I'm doing a traditional IRA and I want to get to Roth. Well, you can join the party. There's a price of admission though to this party. My friends, okay, there's a tax. When you want to convert, if you've got a traditional IRA and you want to get it to Roth, because remember, on a traditional IRA, you're building that thing up. You're building that big nest egg. And when you pull it out of retirement, you got to pay tax on it when you pull it out. But if you can convert it over to Roth or even a chunk of it, you can move that money to Roth. You'll pay tax on whatever you convert. So you're like, I'm going to move over 50 grand, 10 grand, whatever. Whatever amount you decide to move over to Roth, you're going to pay a tax on the amount converted. And because you got a tax deduction when you put that money into your traditional, remember? And so you got to pay a tax when you convert it to Roth. Now, the sweet thing is when you grow that Roth account, it's all growing tax-free. Because now when you pull that money out, and hopefully that little seed of money you converted over to Roth turns into a big harvest that turns into a really big return when you get at retirement. And so so that's the Roth conversion strategy. Anyone can do it. There used to be high income restrictions on that, but there are no longer high income restrictions. Anyone can now convert to Roth. So go out, get yourself a Roth, make the conversion. In fact, I was just talking to a client this morning in my office who's a huge Roth fan. And he's like, why would anybody not do a Roth? And he's got a couple hundred thousand in traditional dollars. And he's just like, I just got to pay the price now. I just got to convert now. And he's totally right. Because in 10 years, when he's got a big nest egg of Roth money, he's like, I'm so glad I made this Roth conversion. So, yeah.
Matt, can I just add a couple riders to your comment?
Yeah.
From representative from Arizona, if I may.
Yes, I will defer the balance of my time to the senator from the great Granite State. Granite State?
I don't know.
I don't Gem State.
Gem State, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
the distinguished gentleman.
Okay. The reason why this is a tip right now, guys, you have until December 31st to do any conversion. Now, you cannot recharacterize it and change your mind later. That used to be the old rule. So under the GOP bill and under the Trump, you know, tax plan, there was a lot of cool things. A few things got taken away. This is one of them. You don't get the change your mind provision. So by December 31st, you choose a piece. And the next point I'd make is do chunking. Just take a little bit. Convert $1,000. Convert $5,000. Just convert a little bit and get that over into your Roth. Don't try to do it all at once, but just say, you know what? I'm going to do it in pieces. We call it chunking. Some people, of course, think back to Goonies and Steven Spielberg and Astoria, Oregon. That's true. We believe in chunk, but okay, that's a whole other story. Now, here's the other thing. We have the best trust company in America, coordinated with our law firm, with bank regulators and FDIC insurance and all of the protections to make sure your money is guided and protected the way you want. And that is done at Directed IRA. So you can get over to directedira.com, give our law firm a call. They'll hook you up, get you lined up with a new account. You can do a rollover. You can set up a new account. It all can be done at Directed IRA. So I think you're going to love it. It's a great place to get started and make sure that you've got the law firm working with you. Matt, anything you want to add to that? I don't know.
Yeah, I love that little pitch for Directed IRA. We're ready to help if you want to self-direct it. So give us a call. And obviously helping anyone who wants to convert, we have that capability to help you do it. And right now, like Mark said, the chunking is popular. I mean, this is a good time to break it up. And I think some people, you know, if you kind of have some consistent income and you're pretty good at paying in on your taxes are going down in 2018.
Yeah.
You know, this additional tax to convert some money to Roth might not hurt that much anymore.
Good idea.
Might have some room.
Yeah. This would be the year to do it in some ways.
Rates have gone down. And so a lot of business owners are getting the 20% deduction. And so this could be a good opportunity to convert to Roth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. Well, I'll just say it finally. You know, whoever your tax advisor is, before your end, schedule a half hour with them. Say, let's look at my return. Let's try to estimate what my tax savings is going to be under the GOP bill. We're all the estimates, including our own and the Senate Advisory Committee, is that about 70% of Americans are going to save taxes, anywhere from $1,000 to $50,000. That's that. Depending on your structure, you're going to see tax savings. So maybe this is a year to do a little Roth conversion, take some of that savings, throw it towards that account, and just knock it out at the same time. Great point, Matt. Okay, well,
you got the legal tip?
Yeah, let's hit into that legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, I'm excited to bring you the legal tip this week. And this originates from kind of another incredible experience of being on NBC in a top 12 market of Seattle last weekend. And it's an honor to have media like Fox and NBC and number of those news agencies reaching out for an interview, and it's kind of weird. And it is very, there was a lot of pressure. If any of you want to talk about it sometime, we can talk about it. When you go on a set that's live and you're getting interviewed and there's cameras and there's a team of people in a room controlling microphones and cameras digitally on remote, and cameras are swinging around, and you got to be thinking, how can I engage with me? I don't know, Matt, this might be,
it's
a challenge. And do you mind if I say one more word about it? I didn't plan on saying
it. This is cool. Yeah. No, I watched it. It was great. You did great, by the way.
Well, thank you. But it is so complex, because when you're sitting there, first of all, my goal is to look at them. I'm never supposed to look at the camera. I've been coached like 10 times, and I had to do some minor markets before Chicago picked me up. And then I went to LA, and then I got a New York and MSNBC interview. And they don't take anybody. You got to prove yourself in these lower markets and kind of cut your teeth being on the camera. And if you look like an idiot, they'll never pick you up. And so I've got to say, it's been a lot of work, and I'm passionate and fun, and it's interesting. But anyway, so when you walk out there, you can't look at the camera. You got to look at the interviewer. So Samantha Guthrie is interviewing me, I've got to look at her. And meanwhile, there's an internal dialogue going on. And many people don't know that. I'm thinking, okay, what is she going to ask? I don't know. Because they give her 3 or 4 questions, but based on how she's feeling in the day,
right,
the interviewer can go anywhere. I got to respond. I can't be, you could do that. They want me definitive. They want me to be on it. They like it when I smile, like it when I laugh. So I can't be thinking about what I'm saying. I have to be thinking about, where is she going? And am I smiling? Are my legs folded properly? And then what's crazy, people, you don't know this. As soon as she asks me a question, okay, camera's on me. She's not even looking at me. She's looking at the teleprompter. So I'm responding to her. It's almost like you're talking to your best friend and they're texting and not listening to you, and it's annoying, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what she's doing. She's looking at the teleprompter, looking at her notes, fiddling around in her chair, trying to look pretty, boom, 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 boom. All that's going on. Meanwhile, I got guys walking around the set behind me on headphones. They're talking, they're generating. And meanwhile, I got to be 100% hyper-focused on answering that question. And I can only take 30 seconds. It's got to be a dialogue. I can't go on a diatribe. All this is going along in my head. Meanwhile, I've got to be perky, funny, insightful. Mm-hmm. And then, soon as I'm done talking, boom, she's laser focused back on me. Camera 3's on, light goes off, and she's asking me the next question. And then I've got to answer when she's, you know, doing it. It is crazy. And I feed on that. It was interesting. I don't know. Some of you may be listening to the show. No one's ever told me that. I you know, they don't coach you on that per se. You just figure it out or you don't. And so, this interview this weekend was on LLCs. And so if some of you caught it on the YouTube channel, there's LLCs around the country being pierced, and they're not protecting people with their VRBO, Airbnbs, and rental properties. And everybody's up in arms going, whoa, why isn't my LLC working? Well, it's because you're holding up one sheet of paper because you did it on the state website by yourself or on LegalZoom, paid $99 and think you're okay. And so that was the topic of this interview on NBC. And it was just, I don't know, man. It was just fascinating. And I don't know if you have any feedback. I don't want to go on a diatribe here with you, but.
No, I mean, I think, man, I just even shooting our own videos in the office, you know, I still remember the first time doing it and standing in front of the camera. And I felt like, I felt like Will Ferrell in Talladega Nights getting interviewed after he raced his car, Ricky Bobby. And like, just like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, what do I do with my, like, you know, I'm like, are my hands in the camera in the shot, or like,
you know, it's just like, oh my gosh.
If you've never shot video like that before, we've had other employees do it in the office, and you get in front of some of the other attorneys, I just remember, and they get in front of the camera and they're just like,
and you're dead.
Okay, right, I'm ready now. Okay,
time of death, done.
Yeah, he's like, all right. It's tough, man. It is tough. And so being live with all that stuff going on is, I mean, but you've done all the hard work to get there, to be ready to do that, from speaking and all the video you do on your YouTube channel, which is awesome. So I felt like you kind of went through the minors, leagues, maybe. Played some college ball.
It is interesting, and I'm building relationships with these producers and these anchors, where I send them a gift after and say thank you, and then when I call them up and go, hey, do you know the affiliate over in Denver? I'm going to be there, and they're like, hey, you know what? Let me do you a solid. And they'll call the producer on their cell phone in Denver and go, hey, Mark's in town. Trust me, this guy, he won't screw up your show. Yeah. Because these anchors and these producers, they're looking for content, but they can't have someone out there that's going, you know, wait, look like
tax and legal guy. We're going to have the local chef do something on food, you know.
Anyway, so that's probably a whole other topic, but some of you might be fascinated by that. It is fascinating to me. And you watch the final point is you watch the Today Show and you see someone just go on there doing a cooking piece, you know, and they're cooking something and they're demoing a product and you think, oh, I could do that. Oh yeah. Just try to do it in your kitchen with someone holding a camera or a GoPro and try to look smooth and what you're going to say and how you're going to say it. And you don't know how they're going to react to what they're tasting. And then you got to do that in front of a million people live. And you know that's going on in the back of your head. It gives you a whole new respect for watching these interviewees on shows. But so anyway, the legal tip, sorry for those that are completely bored by that. The point is, the legal tip is LLCs, and this is what I shared on that NBC clip, is that LLCs work. They are incredible for asset protection if you maintain them. You got to take care of them, people. You've got to do your minutes. You've got to have a separate bank account. You got to put the property on title. You got to use it on the lease agreement. You've got to make sure money goes in and out of the LLC properly. And all those little pieces of paper, the organizational book, the stock certificates, you think it's okay that I have one sheet of paper with my LLC. That's what LLCs are. They're supposed to be simple and easy. Yeah, good luck in court. And there's a lot of fly-by-night companies that try to sell them on the cheap, or CPAs are doing LLCs for their clients, or you're going online and click, 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 and you think you're done. And I'm sorry, you're not. You've got to maintain these and do them properly. Hence, we have an amazing company maintenance program, CMP. Becky Lloyd and her team at our office do a fantastic job for just $150 a year, making sure all the paperwork's up to date. Now, you might have to do a cleanup, pay a few hundred bucks to do what you should have done in the first place. But if you feel like your LLC is a mess, trust me, someone that's going to litigate against you will want it to be a mess. They will exploit that. They will take advantage of you because you did not maintain your LLC. And then you lose your home. There's a judgment. There's other lawsuits involved. I was just on a phone call with a client yesterday that's in a big lawsuit. And they're like, they said, Mark, I called the person that sued me and said, why didn't you just call me? I would have resolved this with you. They said, no, my family told me it's just best to file a lawsuit. And they're like, you just don't know. And if you're doing these short-term rentals with Airbnb and VRBO, they can be a nightmare, you know, with a bad tenant. They can also be a heaven sent. I had a client that just made $46,000 last year in short-term rental income on a property that was just a piece of, you know, HUD $1,000 a month rental, and they turned it into a short-term rental, and it was a huge win.
Yeah.
But they can also turn on you if you cut corners. So I don't know, Matt, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, you know, last week I talked to a client that, you know, came to the firm, but they set up their entity online, they did it on the state website, and they went to sell a property that they bought with this entity. And the title company's like, where's your operating agreement? I don't have one. Here's the articles from the state. They're like, where's your operating agreement? And he's like, and they would not let him close until he would produce one. And so, you know, a lot of those things, it's like, yeah, I can maybe get by spending some, you know, being cheap, and I may even get my bank account set up. But when big things happen, people are going to ask for those documents. That's the stuff you're supposed to have. So don't cut the corners. It'll help protect your assets. It also will make your entity work in the end. So that's just a little way to echo that legal tip in another way.
Yeah. And again, many of you know, our podcast is not about being an infomercial. Wait till you hear about this cryptocurrency, and I've got to introduce that for a moment. But if you know that your entity, LLC or corporation, is not where it should be substantively, give our office a call. Just call the main number, KKOSLawyers.com. is call the main number and say, I need your CMP program. My LLC needs cleaning up. They'll get it in place. We're not there to take advantage. We want you to be with us for many, many years to come. You can shop the cost of that at 10 other law firms, and you will find out that we will very well be the most affordable, the most efficient, and the most organized. We can put your address on a virtual mail service where you have complete identity protection from the public record of your LLC. We have a mail forwarding service if you want the hard mail forwarded to you. We will help you get this done affordably, but don't ignore it. It's just it's so, so important. So, woo. Well, Matt, I want to give one last disclaimer.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Now this is one that I've been talking on. I apologize, people. This cryptocurrency. I'll say two words, Matt. You say two words. People, this, as you've already seen on the podcast, this is the longest podcast we've had in the history of our
show. We're in a while, yeah.
Yeah, long time. This is going to be a long show. The guest we're having on is literally one of the nationwide experts. Some would argue worldwide experts in cryptocurrency, blockchain technology. This is complex. Now, you may just stop listening to the podcast today right here because you could care less about it. Don't do it. Take a couple drives. Mm-hmm. Take two or three drives to get through this podcast. It is fascinating. It's going to be complex. It's going to take a little open mind. And you might have to rewind the podcast and listen a little bit. I did. Mm-hmm. This is very, very technical info. But you've got to know. Here's the example. 20 years ago when someone said, let me tell you about the internet, you're like, whatever. You didn't care. You didn't think it was going to do what it's going to do. That's what could happen with cryptocurrency. So be patient as we go through the rest of this show. Don't give up on it and listen because there's some really, really interesting things. Matt, I don't know. Am I out in right field?
Yeah, and I'd say too, I think we've all heard cryptocurrency and some of you listening know a lot about it. You've already invested in it, maybe made some money on it. Some of you, just have heard the hype, you know, you've heard it on the news, you've heard people talk about it. You heard about Bitcoin maybe, but that's it. You don't even know what the heck it is. So we're going to try and just break that down, but it is a complex subject. And what I'd say is get out there and get other resources too. Try and fill in the blanks on if you're really trying to learn this subject, maybe you're looking to invest in it. Are you just trying to understand where the future is going in the world of finance? This is a big topic. Everyone's talking about it within the government, the treasury, the banks. This is a huge, huge topic. So hopefully you'll find it interesting. But like Mark said, yeah, it's dense. It's advanced stuff. It takes a while. So we're trying to break it up to you though throughout the show.
Yeah, I completely concur, my good friend, Matt Sorensen. And thanks everybody for listening to the show and sharing the show with your friends and family, because we really are trying to be on the cutting edge of so many different topics that affect you as Americans and small business owners and savers. So it's just so important.
All right, Mark, you ready for the guest?
I am. Let's hear our power jingle. And then why don't you give him a big introduction?
All right.
Buckle up. It's time to refresh you listeners. Mark and Matt have hand-selected professionals from around the world. From successful businesses, personal stories, or hard-hitting tips and tricks, please welcome today's Refresh Your Wealth guest.
All right, well, I hope you felt the power there. Well, let me introduce Scott Carter to the show. He is a two-time guest. He's been with us before on Precious Metals, which is a great show. But Scott's actually spent a lot more time more recently in the crypto space, dealing with cryptocurrency, speaks on it regularly, even has his own little token himself, you know, which is an interesting concept. So, Scott, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt. Mark, great seeing you.
Glad to have you. So is that token kind of a Lord of the Rings thing? I mean, like, you have your own little...
It's my precious. Yes.
Precious.
I don't know. I didn't know whether to take offense where Matt called it my little token or not. Yeah. But that's all right. But I would let that slide.
It's a big token. It's a big token.
It's a big token. All right.
You know, it's
the size of the token matter.
Yeah.
It does to this crowd.
All tokens are, you know, all tokens are a little really. All right. We're going to talk about cryptocurrency. And as Mark and I, at the beginning of the show, we're like, man, this can be a very technologically advanced concept. It's a lot of philosophical underlyings and why crypto even came about and, you know, currency and what is the role in our economy and all this. It's a huge topic. And I think it's been hyped, and I think people have heard the hype more than they've heard the reality. I don't mean that from like it's overinvested or anything. I just mean like, you know, you turn on CNBC or the news or whatever, and it's just all they talk crypto, and the price of Bitcoin's this, and then people don't even know what the hell it is. Like, what is it? Sure. How are people even using it? So, let's just start. Like, what is cryptocurrency?
Absolutely, and I'm going to answer that by decoupling cryptocurrency from blockchain technology, because really the sexy change here. The quantum leap in technology that enables us to do differently what we've really done, you know, since the beginning of time, which is share data or buy and sell goods and services. Blockchain technology, the underlying platform, is here to stay, and it's very, very interesting, and I'll define it in a minute. Cryptocurrency, those are the tokens or the coins that sit on top of blockchain that enables us to transmit data or transmit money, finance, something of value digitally. So those two, they're two very different things. So first is blockchain. And blockchain, you know, the definition probably makes most people's eyes roll in the back of their head. But it's but it's basically a method of distributed ledger technology, meaning, you know, it's not what's centralized in any one server. It's distributed, and it enables us to conduct transactions peer-to-peer, meaning without an intermediary. And I use this example a lot because I think an example probably explains it better. If you would envision the three of us sitting in an auditorium, 1,000 people in an auditorium, and Matt, you and I were on the stage.
Yeah.
And all 1,000 people were watching us. And you had a show guide. And I asked you, will you sell me that show guide for $5? Mm-hmm. Everybody's watching us. And you said, yes. Everybody watches me pull $5 out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. And I turn to the auditorium, all 1,000 people, and I say, does everybody agree that I just took this $5 out of my pocket? And it's my $5. Everybody agrees. There's no dissenters. Mm-hmm. Everybody agree that Matt owns that show guide. No dissenters. Everybody watch now. I give you the $5. You give me the show guide.
Yeah.
I turn to the audience, all 1,000 of them. I say, does anybody disagree with me that we just conducted this transaction that I gave Matt $5, he gave me the show guide? No dissenters. Great. That's a blockchain platform technology. Instead of 1,000 people watching, it's 1,000 servers around the world, all with distributed data, watching every transaction. And if something doesn't match, if I'm not who I said I am, if I spent that $5 before, the blockchain will not allow the transaction to go through.
Now, let me ask, why do we need that? Like, what's the big deal? Like,
okay. And that's a great question. Here's to me, the game changer for Matt and I to do that transaction. If we were not in the same room, I would need a bank account. I would have to wire the money. Maybe I would need to write a check. Maybe I would need a credit card to pay for it.
Or an escrow.
And Matt would need the same thing. I would need some entity to validate that I actually have the money, that I am who I am, that it's a legitimate transaction. The mechanism to transfer the money, whether it's an ABA number, whether it's a credit card, whatever, I need a mechanism that's a separate entity. And because we're entities, then I'm going to have authorities, organizational structures, regulatory bodies overseeing this. If it's international, it's 20 times more complex.
Yeah.
And then Matt needs the same structure, intermediary or intercessor on his side, just to do this transaction if we're not in the same room.
Okay. Now, let me ask that. So, Okay, so this is not cryptocurrency. This is a technology that a bunch of programmers figured out that said, we need to make it easy for you and Matt to do business to exchange that show guide for $5 without having, you know, with YouTube being in two different places, whether it's New York or LA or Amsterdam in Australia, we're going to make sure that you two can make that exchange simply and easily without paying for an escrow, without paying for someone to be in between to make sure that you really have $5 and Matt really has a show guide and that that transaction occurs. So this technology does that verification for you. That's blockchain.
That is blockchain. And the fact is that it's encrypted and on the blockchain platform. So all previous transactions, everything about me in within that ecosystem is on blockchain and cannot be penetrated or changed and not centralized at any one institution.
Okay. Now that existed before cryptocurrency.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Now define cryptocurrency for us and put the two together then. Tell me what crypto is.
Cryptocurrency was created when blockchain was created in 2008 by an individual or an entity, and we don't know who it is. They go by the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto.
Okay.
It came out of the 2008 recession. It was a white paper describing and explaining blockchain platform and Bitcoin.
So they came out at the same time, but exactly. They're not. You, okay, keep going. I thought one was before the other.
No, you need both. Bitcoin runs on its blockchain platform.
Okay.
That was the first coin. That was the mothership.
Okay.
From that point, additional technologists, Bitterick is a guy's name. He created the Ethereum blockchain platform. And he further decoupled blockchain from cryptocurrencies. So on Ethereum blockchain, you could have an individual could generate a token like my token, Trident Gold. Okay, it's what's known as an ERC-20 contract token that is compatible on the Ethereum blockchain platform. I don't have to have my own blockchain to have my cryptocurrency. I can use the Ethereum blockchain platform. And if I'm compliant with their coding, then my token will get all the benefits of the Ethereum blockchain platform, even though it's not my own blockchain.
Okay, give me a shot at this. Now, people, if you're listening to our podcast, please keep in mind those regular listeners, you know that we oftentimes don't get this technical or complex. We try not to. We try to keep things in layman's terms. And I know, Scott, you're doing a hard job here of trying to make this understandable for the basic human being. Now, what we're trying to do here with these questions of mine is I just want to kind of understand this at the conceptual basic level. And then I know many of you that already are interested in Bitcoin may not care and you want to get to some other topics. We'll get there. But so Scott, let me try to summarize this as best I can. So thanks for letting me just look big picture. So I'm out there in America in 2008, just doing regular commerce like everybody else. And someone, this mysterious individual somewhere in the world, created this blockchain concept technology platform and said, I'm going to put this Bitcoin on top of it so that people can transact business with a currency that's like no other currency in the world. And people can give it a value and exchange goods and services for this Bitcoin on this blockchain technology. And then everybody else said, oh, I'm going to create my own Chuck E. Cheese token or my own little token and put it on this Bitcoin, on this blockchain technology. So now theoretically, I'm just saying this theoretically, we could have 100 or 1,000 different types of coins or tokens out there all based on this blockchain technology, and this is what everybody's kind of hyped about, is that we can kind of trade these and they can have different values. Okay, is that a decent summary?
That is a great summary. There are 1,700 cryptocurrencies. There are probably 3 or 4 blockchain platforms.
Okay. All right. I am satisfied at this point. Matt, do you want to get much? No, I mean, like, I can kind of get my head around that.
Yeah.
So Matt, yeah. Do you have anything you want to add to because what we want to do is now discuss this at a non-conceptual level per se, because we could spend 2 more hours just talking about this concept and the complexity of it. But I don't know, Matt, what do you think? Where do we want to go now? And Scott, thank you for letting me ask.
Yeah, let's talk about how people are investing in it, how people are using cryptocurrency now. That's what I want to talk about. And then what do we see in 20 years? Like, what is the hype of this on why it's going to revolutionize things? Mm-hmm. Let me just give an example. So I've read a lot about this. So like that description to me and anyone who's read about this before, like you should know that, you know what I mean? And a lot of people, if you've bought cryptocurrency, I have bought some. I bought some with my self-directed retirement account. If you've bought cryptocurrency, you better understand that. And don't be buying into the hype. You need to understand how this works. But what I would say is, I just want to give a little why I got so interested in it. I was listening to every podcast about this. I probably listened to 20 different podcasts on cryptocurrency. And there were some great ones and there were some bad ones. There was one that was like 3 hours, but it was like super technical, but it was, man, that's where you really learn. And I remember they were talking about one of the guys commenting on cryptocurrency. And he said, I think it was Mark Andreessen, the guy that invented the internet browser, right? Netscape, the guy invented it, okay? He's like, remember 20 years ago when we talked about the internet and we told you it was going to revolutionize the world and everyone's like, yeah, right, maybe I'll book a flight on there, or, you know, I maybe check my bank account, and people just didn't realize it was going to revolutionize things. He's like, yeah, and now 20 years later, we're like, we told you so. He's like, that's what I'm telling you, the same thing right now on cryptocurrency. You may be looking at it like, yeah, maybe I use it for one or two things today, or some other people may use it, but in 20 years, we're all going to be using it. And I was like, dang. And really, Silicon Valley is way behind on this. I'm behind on it. They're like backing this big time. They really believe in that this is going to be transformational. And so it's not just a bunch of crazy people that don't believe in, you know, currency. There's a lot of
smart people
behind this. And so that's what kind of piqued my interest.
Scott, do you believe that?
I do believe that. And I know that because it's not just a currency. You know, blockchain and coins or tokens are being used to transmit data easily. So when you look at Walmart, for example, they're using blockchain and crypto to track their lettuce in their vast majority of stores from, you know,
start to finish,
to getting it to the store, because when you decentralize your information and make it point to point, it gets more efficient, it gets streamlined and more effective. And so Walmart's a good example. Mercedes-Benz is doing the same thing for their cars because their cars are stuck out on retail lots. There's a company south of you in San Diego that does 95% of the proxies for publicly traded companies. They've moved their entire collection of proxy approvals and signatures, et cetera, all on the blockchain platform, all on cryptocurrency. That has nothing to do with buying and selling goods. It's just making the process efficient.
Hmm. Okay, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah. So let's talk, Scott. Like, what are people using cryptocurrency for now, either just in commerce or in investing? How are people doing it? Then we'll maybe talk about in 20 years where we think it's going.
Well, in fact, let me clarify that question. There's people that just want to get on the Bitcoin or Litecoin or Ethereum bandwagon to make money. I'll buy it, I'll sell it. They just see it as like a stock. But then there's people that see it for what I think you're trying to say, Scott, for what it really is. And it's this transactional, revolutionary change that people don't realize is coming. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, in the early stages of cryptocurrency, and I would still say that we are early in the, this new transformational technology, it's about becoming a bazillionaire. That's what investors want to do all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the cryptocurrencies that have been issued as ICOs at the start, people buy them because they think they're going to become billionaires, not because the crypto itself has a lasting redeemable value. Mm-hmm. So there's a big difference in my view between where it is today or where it was when it started and where it will be in 20 years. But we can talk more about that, as we get into it.
But let me ask this in just the investing, and you know, Mark brought that up as people kind of see it as a stock. And, you know, when people are out there investing, we've seen a lot of people do it with their retirement accounts too, even. And, you know, investing in crypto, no matter where the money's coming from, is risky. But like, how do what should people look at when they're looking at buying cryptocurrency as an investment? What,
sure.
Like, what should you, what a few things, I mean, there's obviously no one can predict what to buy right now, but like, what are a few things I should be considering before I invest in crypto?
Right. Well, one, you need to understand where to go to even find the information. You know, that's an exercise itself to go to what coins are being listed. What does the white paper or really the description of the token, what's it supposed to do? And don't chase the new, you know, shiny thing, which is what a lot of investors do.
Yeah.
And they end up getting burned by it. So, you know, Bitcoin, its value, even though there's not a tangible asset behind it, Bitcoin's value is driven, one, it was first to market. That's always helpful. But it's a supply and demand on currency. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin came out and said that there will only be 21 million Bitcoins mined in the history of the coin. And every time more are mined, it gets exponentially more difficult to get the next batch. So that is a built-in throttle, if you will, on not creating something of value out of control, like the dollar or like the euro. So its value is driven by supply and demand.
All right. Let me ask this. Let's say I do, and again, I maybe tend to be the one to kind of dumb this down to some practical steps. Let's say I'm a little inspired by this show and I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy some cryptocurrency. Where would I go? And what are some places you would recommend I'd listen to or read to just spend maybe 2 to 3 hours of, okay, here's the basics you really need to know. Go to this platform and maybe look at the following 4 to 5 currencies and spend $1,000 if that's what you want to try to do to just start to get engaged. I don't know. Is that a fair question?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are sites where you go to where it's, you know, mycryptocurrency.com or IO, and it lists the tokens usually by their value. And you can click on them and read their white paper. It will also identify the ICOs, meaning the initial coin offerings, new coins coming out that you could invest in. Not every coin's an ICO. We'll get to that in a second. But you go to, there are online location sites, Mark, where you can go and read up on not only the current cryptocurrencies that are in the marketplace, but those that are coming out in the future. But I will caution your listeners that, you know, at full maturity, we will not have 1,700 cryptocurrencies that are going to be currency. They're going to have to meld together, or somehow they're going to be winners and losers based on the viability of the cryptocurrency long term. So that's why, you know, Matt said it, and so are you. You've got to be very careful on what you're doing. And this is money that is speculative. You shouldn't be betting your retirement account other than as much as you are willing to lose, because you don't know who the winners and losers will be. I can't tell you who the winners and losers will be. I have my favorites. Bitcoin is 50% of the market. It has an established base and a position and street cred. Ethereum, you need Ether, which is another token, to do every transaction. So that's got lasting and staying power. There's a new one that just came out today from JP Morgan. It's called Circle, and it's a stable coin. It's backed by the dollar. That's got an interesting potential. It's not one of these, I'll become a bazillionaire, but it's a token that will get scale and be used to conduct commerce. So those are the types of things that you evaluate the viability, in my opinion, of the cryptocurrency and how it can be used long-term to determine what you invest in.
Interesting.
Matt, can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Yeah. I paused for a minute because you didn't, so I'm going to jump in. Do you think there's going to be a run-up like we saw with the Bitcoin from 2012 to 2016, where it was just berserk, and maybe 2014 to 17? It was kind of 3 to 4 years where it was off the chart, and people made a lot of money, and maybe they cashed in, maybe they didn't, and now it's kind of stabilized. Do you see this run-up possibility again?
For it to become what its ultimate goal is, there will have to be a run-up. I was just at an event with Tom Draper, maybe it's Tim Draper, the billionaire in San Fran. He's projecting Bitcoin to be $250,000. We're at $6,400 today. So he's a pretty smart guy, has a significant investment, has been in every major technology change in Silicon Valley that's come out, has been very good at picking winners and losers. So yes, these cryptocurrencies, if they replace fiat currency at maturity, they have to increase in volume or value. And that early adopters make the most money. I'll give you an example. As early as Bitcoin is in its lifespan, had you just invested $1,000 7 years ago, so in 2011, not in 2008, $1,000 in 2011, you would have $20 million today. $20 million.
What? Son of a gun.
And by the way, that's
thank you for that slap in the face.
Yeah, that's with Bitcoin at 6,400. In December of last year, it was at 19,000.
Yeah.
So it is volatile, and it's primarily been used as an investment vehicle today, Matt, which is what you were getting to. So as new coins come out, people want to pick what has staying power and lasting power, because they will have to go up in value if they take a sizable piece of the pie called transacting goods and services. Mm-hmm. And therein lies probably the most significant component. Right now, cryptocurrencies have a market valuation worldwide of about $250 billion. There's $90 trillion of money. So it is a sliver on that pie. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that a digital currency is adopted and displaces the way we conduct commerce worldwide, it will have to increase in value, and the early adopters will make the most money, and the market will go up in value. And I think that that is probably the most transformational component of it,
yeah.
Is that there's a desire for there to be a digital currency, even by the Federal Reserves. They'd love to get rid of physical cash. They would love that. So I think it's got a lot of legs.
Let's talk about where people go to buy it, then what, you know, how do I use it? Let's say I want to exchange it for something, you know, do I need a wallet? Maybe explain that.
Sure.
How that, so if someone's actually got it, what am I going to do when I go buy it? How do I keep it, and how do I then use it or sell it?
Right. So let's start with, the big Megillah, which is Bitcoin, and therefore the exchange that you go to set up an account to buy and sell cryptocurrencies. Coinbase is an exchange that has four tokens on it, four coins on it. Bitcoin being one, Litecoin, Bitcash, Bitgold. That's the only thing that runs on Coinbase. They just announced today that they were going to start accepting Circle, the one I mentioned earlier, from the big bank. So what you do is you go to that exchange, you can do it online, and you set up a Coinbase account in your name. And the requirements are like setting up a bank account. You need a proof of ID, and you need to connect either your bank account or give them a credit card if you want to buy things. And you enter, if you will, into the cryptocurrency ecosystem by putting some of your fiat currency into your account in Coinbase that then gives you the ability to buy the cryptocurrencies that are traded on that exchange.
Now, can I do this?
Now, it's only four, though. There's only four options, right?
Well, that's only four on Coinbase. You could go to Bittrex, which is another huge exchange. Bitfinance is, I think, the biggest in the world. They all have Bitcoin as well on them. You could go to Krakow. That's an exchange. There must be 50 exchanges or more around the world.
Now, can I do this on Minecraft? Because I want to build it up in Minecraft. I just want to make sure.
You want to have your gold money in Minecraft.
Hey, if I get Scott to laugh, that's a win for me. And I
saw him courtesy. Smile. I think that was a courtesy laugh.
No, I think I really did.
Am I a tough sell on a laugh? I think you're funny, Mark, despite what everybody else says.
Oh, Scott, you're good. No, I just went. I loved it when you said, then you enter you know, ethos of this. I'm like I just walked into Minecraft. Do I get a little pickaxe and a little, you know, I can build blocks?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like that because you can't interchange. It's like you can't come back out of the fiat world unless you go back to the exchange. So you put your money into your account on the exchange, whichever one you choose. Okay. Now that gives you access to all the cryptocurrencies that are listed on exchanges. And as I said, there are 16 or 1700 of them. Mm-hmm. And you can then purchase them at their price and they're traded all day, every day. They range from 2 cents to 6,400 like Bitcoin is. And you can purchase with fiat money the cryptocurrencies you want to own. And now they are in your digital wallet. Let me explain what a wallet is. It's just like your wallet that you're carrying your credit cards around, only it is a digital wallet that primarily lives online. And it's a encrypted wallet that only you know the password and only you know have the access to. And that's where your digital tokens are stored. That's where the value is.
Scott, you're such a dichotomy because just a couple months ago, we had that amazing show with you on
precious metals.
And right there in your office behind you, or well, you're careful with your security, so I'll just say, but near you somewhere, I don't want someone raiding Scott's house right now, you've got actual gold. And so on one hand, you're talking about this digital currency is in this, you know, other dimension and it's there online, and then you turn around and you're still buying silver and gold. It's like you're hedging against both. I don't know, do you find that a dichotomy or not? Or
I don't you know, I actually don't. It's most people would, because very few people in the financial world really know what the history of our money is and what real value is. So cryptocurrencies to me came very naturally because I understand the history of money. And so I had been spending every month talking to investors about physical gold and cryptocurrency. And it was an epiphany for me because cryptocurrencies were taking control away from a centralized authority, whether it's a sovereign nation or an entity, on the value of our money, that it can't be manipulated, that it can't be made out of thin air, that it can't be, you know, devalued at the whims of a politician. And that is really the role that gold played prior to 1971. So it's changing my physical gold business, Mark, because it's so easy to, my token is 100% backed by physical gold. It is so easy to own now physical gold in a digital format, and you can always come back to me and liquidate it for gold, and it'll move up and down with the price of gold, but you don't have to have the clunky gold in your safe. Mm-hmm. And so I use this example. It's like when Mick Fleetwood met Stevie Nicks. Separately, they were terrible. But together, as Fleetwood Mac, they were comparable. Gold and cryptocurrency are incomparable because it gets all the value of a real asset that can't be controlled or manipulated, that's been the measure of our worth for 5,000 years, and you don't have to transport it around the world. And that's why I got into it, because I think it's going to fundamentally change. It's redefining money. They don't want to say that. You know, they're not even defining cryptocurrencies as money. It's technically a commodity, but it's really redefining who controls the value of the money we use or the currency we use to buy and sell goods and service. And that to me is the big change.
Do you know anybody that bought Bitcoin in 2011 for $1,000 and then converted it to real US dollars for 20 million?
Yes. I think that that's why the price went from 19,000 down to 6,400. Here's the problem you had in June of 2000.
Mark, I had lots of Roth IRA. I had Roth IRA clients buying it in 2012 and 13 and asking me, can I do this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. But
did they convert it back to dollars?
They did. They did. And here's why. I used to trade a long time ago. There's a term called painting the tape. Okay. And you paint the tape when you have illiquidity in a market. You create a feeding frenzy.
So all right, hold it. Start over. You're talking. I didn't even get that. So
okay. So I'll explain it to you.
I'm a little dumber. So
No. It's a phrase from when we used to use a ticker tape. Okay. And it goes back in trading when they used the ticker tape, and they had a phrase called painting the tape, meaning making it look like it was something better than it was.
Okay.
So now let's go back to June of 2017. Bitcoin has a world market value of $500 billion. Okay. And 1,000 entities own 50% of it. So 1,000 wallets or 1,000 people owned 250 billion of the 500 billion, only 1,000 people wallets. Mm-hmm. So if you have 250 billion of Bitcoin because you got in early and you've got all your wealth tied up in an asset and you can't get out, you've got to figure out how to create liquidity. So what they do is those 1,000 people all know each other. And say Matt and I are part of the 1,000. I say, Matt, I'm going to sell it to you for $10. You sell it back to me for $10 more. I sell it you for $10 more. And we increase the value and you create a manic feeding frenzy with the price going up to drive more interest.
Oh.
And we went from 5 million wallets to 25 million wallets. Everybody wanting to buy it because they didn't want to miss out. It's human nature. And the price went from $3,500 to $19,000. And now we've got 25 million people worldwide that are invested in it. Now I can sell it.
Are you saying, this is unbelievable. Are you saying that the entire run-up on Bitcoin was manufactured with 1,000 people that own Bitcoin?
Probably more than 1,000. No. The run-up on Bitcoin occurs when the 1,000 people get the ball rolling. You have 20 million more people jumping in because they don't want to miss it.
Yeah, but they knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were doing. So then when it hits 19,000 and you've got 25 million people in,
they can cash out.
They cash out a portion of it. They cash out and they turn their money from Bitcoin into cash, like the question you were answering. That's why, in my opinion, it went from 19,000 down to 6,400.
Yeah, there was artificial, a lot of artificial price run up in it, where other cryptocurrency had that too, is seeing similar run ups from Ethereum and Litecoin. We're seeing it too and others, but let's talk about so I bought it. I went to one of these exchanges or platforms. I've got a wallet. The wallet has my tokens, which are it has my keys.
Yep.
Keys, right? That are my little secret passwords on, if I want to use this cryptocurrency now, I need to know, right? And it's stored in my wallet. And so now I want to sell it so I can go sell it on that same platform or I can exchange it with someone, right?
Yes, you could send it to any other wallet if you wanted to pay for goods and services, even privately. You can trade it for other cryptocurrencies.
Are companies using it now as a way to, they'll sell their goods or services? I mean, how are we seeing that right now in just the general marketplace?
Yes. It's nowhere near, obviously, where it'll be 20 years from now because the big players aren't in yet. But companies like Overstock.com, they'll take cryptocurrency as payment. There are many, many companies that will take Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ether as payment. In fact, I did a compliance audit on my token and the consulting firm would only take Ether as payment. So yes, the answer is that it can be used to conduct commerce, but until it stabilizes as a value to conduct goods and services, it's not going to be widely used. And frankly, the big companies, I mean, it's no secret. Amazon has filed for their own, token. Mm-hmm. Walmart will have their own. Everybody will want to kind of create their own currency of value because in their world, it streamlines payment. Think about it, Matt. If I go into Amazon or if I go online to Amazon and I want to buy a product, I use my credit card, I do whatever. Now if I could just transfer a token, let me state that differently. If I use my credit card, Amazon pays a merchant fee.
Right.
Well, now what if I transfer a token and I don't use my credit card in the banking system? I eliminate every reserve I have from merchant companies. I eliminate the transaction fee for credit card transactions.
Yep.
That all goes away. That expense is borne by the consumer when they bought the Bitcoin and Coinbase charged them exchange. So there's another small example of how it could drop 3 or 4 points to the bottom line of a lot of retailers.
Well, let me ask this, like in, this is how I'm curious in the marketplace. Let's say I've got Walmart tokens, but I want to buy something on Amazon, you know, and I don't have any Amazon tokens. Amazon will accept their tokens as payment, but I've got other tokens. How do I, are they convertible? How does that work? Do I have to go exchange them and then take in Amazon tokens? How does that work?
That is to be determined. I think it's a great question, because why would we need a bunch of different tokens in our wallets? That's where, to me, they will merge or converge to where you've got common tokens as it becomes more and more of a digital currency. You know, it's like iPhones and Samsungs. You know, they don't talk to, the plugs are different. Everything, you know. So right now there's a prevailing thought of, can a token lock in a consumer and create a sticky consumer from a branding standpoint?
Yeah.
Maybe so. But ultimately, if it's the way we're going to buy and sell goods, like every other currency that we've attempted to do, the winners are going to be those that are perceived to be stable, established value, here for the long term, and something that you can trust as a consumer. Those are going to be the winners.
Okay, I have another deep question. This is so cool. I know most of our shows are an hour or less long. Obviously, this is a longer hour show, and that's okay. Our guests, our listeners, hopefully you'll appreciate this. Thanks for taking the extra time with us, Scott. All right, Scott, how do you reconcile this with the doomsdayers? There's that group out there also, just as passionate as you are about digital currency, that are preppers and doomsdayers that, you know what, there will be ultimately a U.S. crash in technology, in the infrastructure of America, and we're going to be going back to gold and going back to just bartering goods and goods as a form of currency. All this digital stuff is make-believe, it's going away, and when doomsday occurs, it's gone. What do you think?
Well, I believe that there will be a debt monetization worldwide and a reset. I mean, you don't have to be much of a doomsdayer to know that we can't pay the bills that we've created, not only in the US, around the world. So there has to be a reconciliation of the debts that have been created and our ability to pay them. And you do that by monetizing them or devaluing the currencies that are in the world. So Mark, I actually think a digital currency could be part of the master plan to actually accomplish that, because there's got to be a way to decouple. The US dollar is the only reserve currency. China, Russia, you know, India, they're all just pounding the table wanting to decrease, if you will, the hegemony of the US dollar. So I believe that will happen. I think digital currencies are part of the mechanism that enables that to happen. Because if you don't have paper money, if you know there's $1.1 trillion of paper dollars in the world actually printed. If that's gone, if you've converted that to digital, you really can't have a run on the bank. You can't go and take your money out. You got to take the haircut of negative interest rates. You've got to take the haircut of a reset on the debt and the monetization. You are beholden to the system in a digital world. And I think that ultimately the doomsdayers are right, but I think, like it always occurs, the people are the ones that are going to take the haircut in the value of our buying power, just like we have historically, whether it's gold or anything else.
Okay, one last kind of naysayer question, and thank you. I've been wanting to ask these deep philosophical questions of someone, and you've got at least a response. Many people just scratch their head. I've heard also from people that are pretty involved in technology at a worldwide level in Fortune 100 companies that say there is a limit on the energy to maintain the server capacity to support digital currency. I think I said that right. He's like,
there's only so many servers. There's only so much energy. And whether you call it oil, gas, solar, nuclear, all of these little servers that are tracking this currency have got to have energy, and there's got to be bandwidth to support it. And that sliver of the pie that you talked about, the reason is a sliver is because it'll decapacitate. We don't have the capacity to maintain any more than that. Thoughts?
That is that's a current limitation for Bitcoin. And here's why. The way Bitcoins are created is they're actually mined, as you said. It takes computing power and servers to basically solve a complex math problem, and that creates Bitcoins. It's a way to control the supply of Bitcoins. The last Bitcoin is scheduled to be mined in the year 2148. There are 17 million that have been mined. There are 21 million total. There are only 4 million left. And so the computing power and the complexity to mine it is the limiting factor and control, if you will, or lack of manipulation of how many Bitcoins are out there. But the utility tokens like mine, you do not have to mine them. I create them as they're purchased. The miners only maintain.
Because they're exchanged for gold. So if I have $1,000 worth of gold, you'll give me $1,000 value token backed by that gold.
That's correct. So the supply and demand in my token, as an example, and some of the others, is purely based on how much is purchased, not some sort of mining process. And so another point I'll make on that, Mark, is that this is new technology. The computing power will drop precipitously as more and more. It's like TVs. You know, they'll figure out a way to make the blockchain platform more efficient using less computing power, less ability to do it, because the money is there to do it. And we'll, even though we can't answer it today, they will find a way like they have in every other way, whether it's, you know, Moore's law of every, you know, 6 months it, you know, having, I don't know. But I'm not too worried about a computing power issue.
And that's, Matt, probably what you're talking about with Silicon Valley, that there's thousands of people working on this technology behind the scenes we don't even know.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, think about this. The blockchain, Mark, I think, like, the banks are using blockchain technology right now, basically, in transferring your money. It's just not open source where everyone can see it. It's banks talking to each other when I'm sending money or I'm buying money or there's money going out of my account to someone else that goes to their bank account. So all that computing power is already being used in commerce, really. This is just taking it off the bank, which in theory saves that computing power, where the banks aren't talking to each other. It puts it in a general open source. Everyone can see now these coins, I guess, extra tokens exchanging between people, and they're getting verified and it's open source. You don't know what that, you know, you trust that it's not being manipulated. So
I think that your point is great, Matt. And I think it's accelerating on the retail side on how people are using it. Where we're talking about ICOs and investments and my small little token, okay, is because it has certainty of value. There are MLMs that I have a relationship with where instead of their client purchasing the MLM's products with a credit card, the client comes to me, buys Trident Gold with their credit card. I put it in the wallet, and now the MLM, because it's a worldwide company, the MLM now conducts commerce within their MLM, their members, with my cryptocurrency. And so if they want to buy if they want to pay their monthly fee of $30, if they want to buy a product that's there, they just transfer to the MLM the appropriate number of tokens, and then the MLM, the retailer, comes to me and liquidates it for real cash behind the scenes. And what the MLM has gotten in value is no merchant fees, no reserve for their merchant fees, a certainty of value worldwide. There's no change in fiat currency value. If you've got, 50,000 people in South America with the real, you know, that's losing 10% a year, now you've got a digital currency that has a value based on the market or based on gold that is more stable. It opens up a phenomenal amount of interest worldwide because of the challenge was fiat.
That's a great point that you make too, is that, of course, big banks in the US, which of course I'm a firm believer are ran by Satan. hence the title of my book, What Wall Street Isn't Telling You. I'm sure the banks are not behind this. And if they do get behind it, they want to be at the forefront like JP Morgan and their new Circle coin. But the real people that want this are the other, you know, trillion people in this world that are like, hey, I said trillion, sorry, other billion people in America, around the world, where their currency is a disaster.
Right.
Inflation's off the chart. And they're like, please bring us crypto. We need something that isn't going to change with the wind based on our dictator.
That's right. Venezuela just introduced the Petra backed by their oil because they were flat on their back. They destroyed their currency. Argentina is looking at the same thing. You have Australia, the Australian Mint just introduced a stable coin backed by the Australian dollar. So, you know, there is a desire to have our currency stable in value. And we enjoy the dollar, which still loses a lot of value, but it's the most stable. Other countries, this would be, you know, a godsend to the people and to the countries because they wouldn't be reliant upon the U.S. dollar and the whims of how we change its value.
Well, Matt, you're going to have to stop me because I'm going to keep asking these crazy.
I was awesome letting questions. You exhaust your questions.
Okay. Scott, you're awesome.
I love this topic. I know it's for many of you listening. If you haven't gotten into it before or geeked out on it yet, it can be a little tricky to navigate. But I think it's one that could be revolutionary. And I think it's worth spending some time to learn about. And before you invest in it, I just want to say, make sure you know what you're doing. Don't bet the farm on it. You know, you can invest with your retirement account. You need a self-directed IRA usually and an LLC. I've got some blog articles on that and how you can do it. But you know, don't bet the farm. Just do a little small sliver if you want to invest in it. But then also, I think a good way to plan it too is just buy some even personally too and see about how you can use it and just experiment with it. You know, I think that's a good way to approach it. The white papers Scott mentioned, I think the white papers are kind of like the, that's like the user guide, so to speak, to your, you know, an electronic you buy or something. It's like, it explains what it is. And that's kind of the industry's kind of just use that white paper terminology for each of the different cryptocurrencies out there. But Scott, any last tips you had for people as they're going out there trying to learn more about this or invest in it? Of where to go or any places you want to send them to in terms of interest in your token?
Sure. Well, I will make one point, and I'm going to quote Steve Jobs. He did an interview video in 1992. I just watched it yesterday, and he said there are points in time where the technology window opens for a brief moment. Mm-hmm. And things that we have done day in and day out forever take a quantum leap forward because of technology advancement. And then the window closes. He said that in 1992. That's what this is. We're still going to buy goods and services. We're still going to do the things we're doing, but the technology advancement will, and we've only changed three times in our history. The technology advancement will create winners and losers in investors. So for your investors, do the research on the tokens that you like based on their long-term value, and you can read a lot on it, but don't ignore it. Because if you want to invest money to make money, the early adopters make the most. Define amounts that you can invest in that you're willing to lose, but don't ignore this space because very rarely do we get a transformational technology change that could have so much valuation potential, and it's worth taking a little risk.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent. Scott, thank you for your time. Great final conclusion to the show. And Matt, I'll just take us out. I want to just tell Scott, thanks again for being here. We appreciate the chance to work with many of you listening and that you'll share your valuable time with us. We love that dream wherever you are in the world. This was a world podcast, not just an American dream podcast. A shout out to our Ireland followers.
Again. That's true.
And we just have a good time. Love y'all. We'll see you next week for another episode of Refresh You Up.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.